superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
Don't bother looking out your window for an ore boat. They're all laid up for the winter. And that makes this a good time to review the last shipping season and the one coming up.
We had the longest ocean-going season in the history of the port this year.
Plus,
feels like I live in a dream.
She hails from Poplar, and she methodically assembled a group of versatile musicians to play dozens of her new songs. We'll hear their story and see things through baby eyes.
Tell me if you like it. Tell me if you like it or not.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. The 2023-24 shipping season is over and the iron boats are laid up for the winter, except you may be asking, what winter? Despite the changing climate, the port has to run on a schedule, and this is the time of the year to retool for the next season beginning next month. Here to review the past year and also tell us about advances at the Port of Duluth Superior is Deb DeLuca, Executive Director of the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, Deb.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Robin. It's always a pleasure, and especially if I get to listen to your opening song first.
And you know, of course, it is not me singing it, but Bruce Nelson of South Range, who does a wonderful job.
So I've been told that it's not you.
Thank you for understanding that. So before we get to the numbers of how much stuff is coming in and out of here, tell us about the climate. We have an unseasonably warm winter this year, and the lake really doesn't seem to want to freeze over as much as what we call normal. Is there any reason not to keep the boats going?
So there's more aspects to that than just the climate. You know, right now we have the one pole-sized lock at the Sioux, and they need some downtime for maintenance of those locks, not just of the pole-sized lock, but the other lock as well. Mm-hmm. So that's one element. And then even though there's only about 4% ice coverage on Lake Superior currently, that doesn't mean there's not going to be more ice later in the season. Oftentimes we have a colder weather later in February and into March. So you know, the ice is still unpredictable, and we don't have year-round ice breaking. Locks need maintenance, and you know, the ships also need maintenance as well.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean we wouldn't look forward to having year-round shipping at some point in the future.
That's exactly what I was going to ask, and actually I was going to do your planning for you and say the ships could have alternating maintenance, right? They don't have to all go out at the same time. They do that because you are closed. But is there any chance, you know, with the changes that seem to be with us, that you would keep it open 12 months?
That's something that we're all, and I say we all, the whole network of U.S. and Canadian ports are curious about as well. So that involves keeping the seaway open as well for the international traffic, of course. And there's some really in the weeds complications with various agreements having to do with that waterway. But, you know, I think that that's something we can definitely think about and work towards for the future.
And this may be back to the future, right? Because I understand there was one year way back when, I suppose there were years way, way back when they didn't have it as organized as today. But in the modern era, shall we say, of the port, there was one year that it was kept open all winter.
Yes, in the mid to late 70s, there was a year when there was a sort of an experiment with keeping the system open year-round. And I can't tell you the outcome of that experiment, except that it went right back to the way it was in the past.
Well, I think we know the outcome. They didn't do it again.
Yeah. Well, and you think about it, to provide that year-round icebreaking 1 year, and then perhaps the traffic wasn't queued up for that. In other words, the chartering the ships, and did the ship owners know, the vessel companies know that this was a reliable opportunity and the like. But again, that was a long time ago before I was ever involved. So I don't know the outcome.
Right. I do remember speaking with the late Jim Oberstar about it. And the whole idea, of course, it was an experiment. And a successful experiment doesn't necessarily mean, okay, we did it, now we can do it. It means you learn from it, right? So they obviously learned, okay, we're not going to do this every year.
Yep, at that point in time, and again, that we may look to the future may look different.
Well, it is different, right? They did not anticipate what we now know is very real climate change. We are speaking with Deb DeLuca, Executive Director of the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. We're talking about the Port of Duluth Superior. So it's among the 20 top ports in the U.S. measured by tonnage, I understand. What were the final numbers for the season just concluded?
Well, let's start out with the iron ore tonnage, just because I think it's so exciting that this is our, you know, iron ore is the king cargo through the port.
It's our favorite, yes.
yeah. It's you know, we're absolutely critical in that steel making supply chain for the nation. And it was an excellent season for iron ore. All of the mines are open. The demand is there. And, of course, having an excellent season is good for the economic activity in our region and on the Great Lakes and really throughout the country. We had more than 21.5 million short tons of iron ore move through the port this year. And it's the most in a single season since January of 1995, since the season, the 1995 season. And kind of everything was up this year. So domestic iron ore shipments were up. Export iron ore shipments were up actually 22% over last year. And the January of 2024 was the most iron ore shipped in a January since we started doing electronic record keeping in 2003. So, of course, that's a great harbinger for the region.
Which you can't necessarily tell by looking at the stockpile that's out there. And I'm saying that because I have this favorite story going back to the Great Recession. And there was a national news reporter came to town and they shot a picture of all the ore sitting out there, all the taconite, you know, the mountain, right? And it was, I think, February. And they said, and in Duluth, Minnesota, the iron ore stockpiles lie fallow because they thought that the economy, you know, was so tanked that they weren't going anywhere. It was like, no, the shipping season hasn't started yet.
Right. They're stockpiling it to send it. So that right when the locks open, those ships can move. You're right.
So what else did we have move this last year?
Well, I should back up and tell you about the total tonnage. I don't know why I went in a different order this time, but the total tonnage, you know, it's not the only measure of a port success, but it's certainly one of them. And it was nice to see gains over last season of 4.5% total tonnage, and the five-season average is just up about a tenth of a percent. Or I should say we're up about a tenth of a percent over the five-season average.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. You always got to keep in mind when you look at that is that the coal is continuing to drop, right? And that's not coming back. So if, you know, back in 2008, the coal really sort of rivaled iron ore for that top spot on some years. So, you know, that drop from, say, call it 20 million tons of coal down to more around the 6-7 million tons at this point. The fact that we're maintaining that five-season average is impressive. It means that everything else is up.
And the coal is coming from western areas. I know Wyoming does a lot of coal, correct? And it goes
right,
by train
right.
And comes here. I mean, everybody knows where the iron ore and the taconite comes from, so we
You'd
don't have
surprised.
To well, okay, they
surprised
don't.
How many Minnesota school children aren't taught that the importance of Minnesota to the nation's steelmaking supply chain? But in answer to your question, yes. The coal comes from the Powder River Basin in Wyoming and Montana, and it moves to the coal dock, the Midwest Energy dock on the Superior side.
All right, and grain. Tell us where that comes from.
Yeah, it comes from it comes from Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Eastern Montana. So it's a pretty broad catchment area for wheat.
Mm-hmm. When we last spoke in 2022, you just received certification as a container cargo port. And I thought that meant that we were going to displace Long Beach as the number one port in the country and, you know, everything from China and Europe would come through us. But no, you said not really. but it has added to your business. So tell us about that.
Yeah, actually containers. So this is our second full season with containers and that volume quadrupled over last year. So that's good news. And the really big news there is the debut of the Splitoff Duluth Antwerp liner service that connects Duluth Cargo Connect facilities with Belgium's biggest port, Antwerp, on a monthly basis. So it's a regular, you know, monthly transatlantic liner service. That's the first time we've had that since the 1970s. And it moved a wide variety of cargoes for import and export. mostly the big pieces of equipment that support mining, manufacturing, wind energy, you know, those big pieces of machinery, mm-hmm. and then also the containerized cargoes. So we started our container service last year and then started that liner service this year.
Is there some kind of measurement that lay people, how about that, like me, could understand what percentage of your business is container cargo?
So here at our Duluth Cargo Connect, the services that are provided by that partnership between our agent, Lake Superior Warehousing, and the Duluth Seaway Port Authority, that's what we call Duluth Cargo Connect. We have an intermodal facility that serves, that moves containers by road and rail, and then we have our maritime facility. With our cargo that moves through our facility, tonnage isn't necessarily the best measure. There's value, there's, you know, a number of containers, so it's, don't have a good answer for you on that. You know, I can tell you it's growing. It quadrupled from last year. That's about as best that I can tell you.
We're speaking with Deb DeLuca, Executive Director of the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. We're talking about the Port of Duluth Superior, and the shipping season just concluded. When we spoke last in 2022, we also talked then very much about the effects of the supply chain crisis during the pandemic. So has everything gone back to normal, or is there such a thing is normal?
Oh, that's such a good question. I would say things are returning to normal. The container market worldwide is sort of calmed down, and that was causing a lot of the disruption that you saw globally. But I will tell you, one of the unique features of the Port Authority's terminal, the Duluth Cargo Connect services, is that modal flexibility we have. We really try to find solutions for our regional industries so they can stay globally competitive. So we move goods by ship, by rail, by, you know, container. We have warehousing, all these different services in order to provide flexible supply chain services. And my point in bringing that up is during the pandemic, when it was difficult to put your hands on containers, we had customers who we helped shift to loading their goods in super sacks in the hull of a chartered ship. Hmm. And so they shipped their goods all the way in through the Seaway and the Great Lakes to our dock. And they continue to use sort of a blended solution. So they use both ship and railing it in from Montreal instead. So I think what really the hallmark of our facility is that flexibility. But yes, globally, things are sort of starting to return to normal.
Except one thing, at that time, we also talked about the war in Ukraine that was affecting particularly things like grain shipment. Now you've got the war in Israel and Gaza and cargo traffic being targeted in the Red Sea and in that area. Are we feeling any effects of that?
You know, I think the Red Sea disruption you're talking about kind of came up just as our season was ending. Hmm. And so we haven't seen that. And I think you need to throw into the mix the other unknown is the Panama Canal. There are challenges with water levels in that canal, so that it's that transit is also less certain. So those are non-pandemic effects that may be continuing to affect our global supply chain.
And it is, if you talk about act locally, think globally or whatever, it certainly applies to your business.
Yes, yes. And I think you just need to be able to be ready to respond.
Right. On a happier note, what does the upcoming season look like? I'm assuming it's happier.
One thing we know is that the iron ore is predicted to perform very much as we saw this season. So 2024 is supposed to be a close replay of 2023. Grain's more difficult to call. We didn't talk about other cargoes that through the port this season. Mm-hmm. We saw gains in 8 cargo categories, led by cement at 29% over last year, and grain at up 22.5% over last year. That cement is really driven by all the infrastructures going on, not just here locally, but also throughout the upper Midwest and Canada, because our port helps supply cement for that sort of catchment area. So I would expect to continue on the same. There's a lot of demand for cement right now regionally. And then grain, I told you grain was up over last year, and that's still down from historic averages, but it was very nice to see it rebound significantly from last year. And what do we expect next year? We had decent harvests this fall. It all depends on the strength of the dollar and the price of grain and what else is happening globally. So I'm not going to put a prediction out on the table for that one, Robin.
I will ask you to comment on something almost political. We had President Biden here for his second visit to Superior. think he likes the town. What do you think? And he gave us a $1 billion promissory note anyway. I don't think he brought the check for replacing the Blatnik Bridge. So will that construction affect your traffic?
Well, it probably won't affect traffic through our terminal. It probably might complicate getting wind blades out of the terminal, for instance. But we're very much looking forward. We're huge supporters of the rebuild of that bridge. That bridge is critical to cargo flows, you know, through the port. It's critical to trade, you know, between Wisconsin and Minnesota, and of course points beyond. So will it disrupt it? You know, it lands right outside of the front of our building. And actually, it's going to be very quiet in front of our building during the peak years of construction for that.
Am I getting the idea you may be doing some remote working?
No, because it will actually be easier to get in and out of our building, right? I will tell you that our partners at both MnDOT and the Wisconsin Department of Transportation are just really fantastic partners in terms of optimizing cargo flows. So, you know, there's always alternative routes that are worked out, and I know that partnership is just going to continue to work into the future as it has, like throughout the Twin Ports Interchange construction, for instance.
Mm-hmm. We think of you just in terms of boats, but when you just said the windmill blades being affected by the bridge, you're saying they're on the trucks going over the bridge, correct? Not on the boats going under the bridge.
Exactly. When planning for the Blatnik Bridge, they did, of course, need to consider, you know, what the airspace above the boats, above the ships that pass under the Blatnik. Mm-hmm. But yes, you're absolutely right. In terms of, a port is not a successful port without excellent landside connections, right? Whatever comes in on the ship needs to move off the ship and out into the supply chain. So, yeah, absolutely. It's you know, we have wonderful free-flowing highway access from this port and from our terminal. Uncongested highways, I might add. And then we also have excellent rail access. We're served by 4 Class 1 railroads right at our terminal, and I think you'll be seeing some blades, because they're getting so long, go out on rail this year.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, and one other part of the bridge construction, or the entire I-35 interchange, is that they can't have sharp curves, right? Because your windmill blades, you know, take up a pretty big tractor-trailer length, or maybe even two or something like that.
Again, I have to credit Minnesota Department of Transportation. When they were planning, for instance, the Twin Ports Interchange, which is an important connector for us, they were investigating the length of the blades to plan for the turning radius. I think is what you were wanting to talk about, provide the right turning radius for the access ramps onto, in this case, I-35. And you know, otherwise, those blades have to go through city streets until they can access an alternative access point. And again, MnDOT and WisDOT both do a great job of accounting for those turning radii and for the weights of the blades aren't particularly heavy, but other pieces of equipment that move off our terminal are.
You know, now that you brought it up, speaking of equipment, I've seen, as I've come off the Blatnik Bridge and by your front door, you've got those white trucks with no backs to them, a whole bunch of them lined up in your parking lot. What exactly are those?
I'm going to correct you. We don't have a lot of them. We lease space down here on Rice's Point, too. We have several different tenants. In addition to our port terminal, we have several tenants on port-owned land. One of them is LTEC. Their manufacturer is the hoist equipment, the hydraulic hoist equipment that you see on, you know, on like cherry pickers and utility trucks. And that's what you see. That space is actually leased from us, and those are their chassis. Actually, it's their customers' chassis, and they are going to outfit those with the requisite hoist for those customers. So if you're seeing the empty ones, they're probably in, they're manufacturing those yet, or they're in the process of manufacturing those. And then you'll also see their completed trucks when they're done and before they're delivered.
So in looking at those things, and what did I say? I passed by a few times, right, sporadically. It looks like the same chassis. But what you just said is, first of all, they're not yours. Secondly, the company that's doing it is outfitting them for a particular client. So I thought, you know, those same trucks are sitting out there, part half trucks, in January, and they're there in April, right? And no, they're not. Okay, I get it. And now that you've straightened me out on that one, any other thoughts?
You know, one thing we haven't talked about yet, it really kind of goes along with your opening comments, is that we had the longest ocean-going season in the history of the port this year. We had the earliest ocean-going ship arrival and the latest ocean-going ship departure, making a total ocean-going season length of 277 days.
All right. Well, maybe I'll get my wish of 12-month shipping after all. We've been speaking with Deb DeLuca, Executive Director of the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. We've been talking about the Port of Duluth Superior, which is more than just the boats. It's getting the stuff in and out once it gets to the shore. Thank you for joining us, Deb.
Well, Robin, it's always fun to talk with you.
Coming up, seeing the world and hearing it through baby eyes. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you've patronized the Twin Ports music scene over the past few years, you might be familiar with some of the names associated with our next guests, which include a number of artists who've been on this show. The group is Baby Eyes, which began when Duluth singer-songwriter Heidi Farrell brought together local musicians to record some of her new songs. She first turned to drummer Curtis Bellows, and then the guitarist and bassist Ian Alexi from the group Hobo Nephews, and they were joined by Kenny Bressler on synthesizer and Jacob Mann of New Salty Dog on keyboards, guitar, and vocals. They have since produced 35 original songs, 12 of which are on their debut album, See the World Through, produced by another local connection, Rich Mattson, who also has been on this show. We spoke with members of the band before that album's release last summer, and they're appearing at Wusso's Concert Cafe in Duluth tonight, Friday, February 16th, at 7 p.m., along with Boss Mama Colleen Myrie. Here's our conversation with Heidi and Ian from last summer. Welcome to Simply Superior, and I should say welcome to the family of all kinds of people who've been here before.
Thanks, Robin.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Ian, we actually met at Earthrider at a benefit concert for Ukraine Medical Relief. Everyone was there, including Rich Mattson. And I remember everybody knew you, both the audience as an audience favorite, and you seem to be a musician's musician. Your name was just, you know, I heard it all night long.
Oh, wow. Well, thanks. Cool.
So, Heidi, tell us a little bit about your background. I do know you're from Poplar, and you're also a visual artist. Which came first, and do they inform each other?
I'm not sure which one came first. I've always been singing, and it was in musical theater growing up. But they do definitely both lend to each other. And I think that they just contribute to one another. Like, the more that I practice both at the same time, especially.
Do you do the same subject where you do, a painting version and a musical version?
My painting is abstract and pretty much based on the moment, when I'm making it. Or just subconscious things that I've got going on or whatnot. But that's a lot like the music, because we get jammy with it and we get kind of abstract with how we present it, I guess, sometimes. So, yeah, it's just based on the moment as well.
Formally trained in one or the other or both?
Both, yeah. Formally trained in both. I just had, vocal lessons growing up and went to college for art stuff.
Mm-hmm. Ian, as I said, everybody knew your name, but give us a little bit more background. For those who, for some reason, didn't know your name.
Oh, I'm one of the older members of Baby Eyes. I'm in my mid-40s, and I started playing guitar when I was 12, which was the heavy metal and grunge era. And then I just kind of evolved from there and got into blues and jazz and bluegrass and went to music school. On the East Coast, I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston, and then I finished in Vermont at Goddard College, and I played in some jazz and funk bands, and eventually I came to Duluth and hooked up with my brother, singer-songwriter Teague Alexi, and we formed the Hobo Nephews of Uncle Frank, and then we toured and made several records with that project. And that more or less brings me up to date with to where we are now.
All right. So what about the name Baby Eyes? And baby is spelled B-A-B-I-E. So
Yeah. Well, when we got together, just Curtis, Ian, and I, we decided we definitely needed a name. So I wrote down a bunch of different names and then texted a picture of it to Ian. And I had one in mind, and then he had the same one in mind. So he saw Baby Eyes, but it was spelled B-A-B-Y. But then we found some conflict with that, with other things, so we changed it to B-A-B-I-E.
I do have one specific memory when this was all working itself out. I do remember this because I don't remember Heidi ever doing something like this before or since. Like, the name Baby Eyes was on the page, but we were both dancing around it because Baby Eyes might sound sort of too strange. And at one point, Heidi sort of stamped her feet and jumped up and down and said, "I want Baby Eyes. It's weird and I love it." Like a mini tantrum, which was totally out of character, but it was funny. It was like, wasn't angry or anything. You were being funny.
And it sounds like it reinforces the baby theme. Yeah. Stamping your feet and having your tantrum.
We were going for a theme of like that would describe our perspective, which is just seeing every day with fresh eyes. So it's just seeing the world freshly every day.
All right.
And the title of the album being See the World Through. And then if you put the name of the band after that, it's See the World Through Baby Eyes. That's kind of the sort of theme of the name and of the band is a fresh perspective.
Got it. We're speaking with Heidi Farrell and Ian Alexi of the group Baby Eyes. So how about something from the album, Feel All Right? Can you set it up for us?
Oh, yeah. This is a song I play for myself to make myself feel better. And it kind of works. We play it at the beginning of most shows, just to kind of set it out.
All right, well, here is Feel All Right by Baby Eyes.
Do what it takes to make it feel all right.
that was Feel All Right by Baby Eyes. We're speaking with Heidi Farrow and Ian Alexi of the group Baby Eyes. They're appearing at Wusso's Concert Cafe in Duluth tonight, Friday, February 16th at 7 p.m., along with boss mama Colleen Myrie. So, Heidi, it sounds like you were rather methodical in constructing the band. I'm noting in particular Kenny Bressler on synthesizer, who has been described as an experimental musician. He doesn't do that in the middle of a recording, does he?
we'll allow it.
Well, there's one song, it's actually the last song on the album, where the lyrics talk about being in an arcade, and he made noises to recreate a video arcade. So he gets pretty experimental. He does some really neat stuff.
But was that a surprise when you heard it, or did he say, hey, I'm going to do this?
Oh, I had written that particular song, and I asked him to do it.
Yeah, but from the get-go, I knew he was an experimental musician. And when I heard him play, I thought, yeah, he'd be a great person to create some atmosphere. You know, he'd add a lot of that, and he really does, for sure. And he bought one of my weirdest pieces that I had in my art show at Wusso's Coffee House, and that cemented it for me. I was like, no. I mean, I was surprised that somebody bought that, but I'm glad it was Kenny.
It sounds like you were saying, I was surprised that anybody bought that, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm always surprised. Yeah.
Well, I know you said they were abstract, but what is it? What was the piece?
Oh, it was a green... like bust of a woman peeling her face off.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's called anticlimactic reveal. Like the what's beneath the surface is just the same as what's on the surface. There's a period of time in my life where I felt like one with being the strange person I am, and I don't mind.
Having gone this far, I might as well ask, is there a musical counterpart to that piece?
Oh, I'm sure it's out there somewhere. I'm sure we...
Okay. All right, we'll find out. So, Ian, would you describe the group as a quintet? And if so, what kind of quintet? In other words, if you go to classical music, you know, you say a quartet, and that's usually two violins, a viola and a cello or something like that, but not necessarily. Is instrumentation pretty set, or is it fluid?
Well, it is fluid. I'm glad you asked that question, because the initial... three-piece lineup was Heidi playing guitar and me on bass and Curtis on drums. Then we added Kenny and Jacob both on keyboards, and that's mostly what the album is guitar, bass, drums, and the two keyboards. But then since Heidi has started playing bass and has gotten really into it, and so I've gone back to guitar, which is what I'm best at, for myself. And now Jacob is also playing guitar, so it does shift a lot. The personnel has been intact, but we've been sort of exploring the different roles that we can all play, which is really fun.
All right. So let's hear another one. How about Like It or Not? Can you set that up for us?
Sure. This one is an exciting one for me. I wrote it and in celebration of kind of getting over a hump in my life. Yeah. So it's just a spiritual renewal sort of thing.
Not quite peeling your face off, right?
No, it's not peeling my face off.
All right, here is Like It or Not by Baby Eyes.
Tell me if you like.
that was Like It or Not by Baby Eyes. We are speaking with Heidi Farrow and Ian Alexie. They're appearing at Wusso's Concert Cafe in Duluth tonight, Friday, February 16th at 7 p.m., along with Boss Mama Colleen Myrie. Going back, Ian, to what I was saying about the region's musicians being collaborative and all helping each other out, you're still playing with Hobo Nephews? And where, by the way, does that name come from?
Oh, gosh. The Hobo Nephews of Uncle Frank. Well, we're Teague and I are brothers, and we have an Uncle Frank. And it was really just sort of a joke because he would sometimes sleep on our couch growing up. And then when we, later on, Teague and I both slept on his couch. So we're sort of a family joke of calling each other hobos. We actually haven't been performing for the last couple of years, but we're still very close, and I mean, we're brothers and best friends, so we certainly haven't ruled out performing in the future, but we've taken a break from it.
Got it. Heidi, for Baby Eyes, where can we find out more about your music?
Well, we've got an Instagram. It's Baby Eyes Music, B-A-B-I-E. We also have a Facebook page.
And a Bandcamp page.
Yeah, a Bandcamp page, yes. And then
where you can download the first two songs now, and the whole album will be there as well. But
yeah.
Great. Well, one more song to take us out. I'm going to suggest Runaway. And you sort of answered this question already because I noted, Ian, you're the soloist on this. You guys said you sort of rotate different instruments and instrumentation amongst yourselves.
Yeah, on this one, I think I'm playing bass and I'm playing a guitar track on it and singing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the way you said, I think I'm
at
playing
the same time, yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
At the same time, yes. And whose song is it?
I wrote the song, yeah, about a friend of mine that had a background of having been a runaway. And also there's a theme of in the history of rock and roll of runaway songs, of course, Del Shannon being a big number one hit in the 60s. But it is a theme in rock and roll that I, you know, just sort of wanted to tap into.
Okay. Well, we'll let that theme, as I said, take us out. We've been speaking with Heidi Farrow and Ian Alexie of the group Baby Eyes. They'll be appearing at Wusso's Concert Cafe tonight, February 16th at 7 p.m., along with Boss Mama Colleen Myrie. Thank you for joining us, Heidi and Ian.
Slow it down, my little runaway. Get your mind out of yesterday. Wild child, you sound like a cliche. One step ahead.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Robin.
And Shelley Nelson of the Superior Telegram. Hello, Shelley.
Hello, Robin.
So, Rick, the Bear Grease was canceled for lack of snow this year, but the Berkey Binder is still on with some major changes.
Yes, the 50th anniversary of the American Birkebeiner Nordic Ski Race was always going to be unique, but the 2024 edition will be unique in some less desirable ways after announcement made by organizers on Facebook Live Monday night. Events are still planned to go on February 21st through the 25th, but as a concession to nearly non-existent snow conditions throughout the region all winter, the week has been significantly modified. For instance, the traditional finish in downtown Hayward has been scrapped, and events will take place on a 10-kilometer loop around the Cable, Wisconsin trailhead, established largely with stockpiled and manufactured snow. The event was last canceled in 2017. Now that the several thousand skiers expected in northern Wisconsin will be concentrated in a much smaller space, several scheduling and logistical changes were made as well. The 50-kilometer distance will now be only for elite professional skiers. All other waves for skate and classic will be cut to three loops of a 10-kilometer track, and skate and classic races have been split up, with the skate on the traditional Saturday and classic on Sunday. The Coeur d'Alene and Prince Hakan support races have been shortened as well. Participants will not be allowed to warm up or test wax before races due to limited snow. And the finish times this year will not count toward race placement in next year's events. And because the event is still taking place, they are not accepting refunds, deferrals, or transfers.
Well, speaking of skiing or not being able to, people are being asked to stay away from the Lutzen Lodge after the fire there nearly 2 weeks ago.
Yes, authorities are asking the public to stay away from the rubble of what remains of the historic Lutzen Lodge Resort. The beloved North Shore landmark in Lutzen was destroyed by a fire early Tuesday, February 6th. On Friday, February 9, after initially describing the rubble as an official crime scene, the Cook County Sheriff's Office issued a correction. The news release stated that the cause of the fire at Lutzen Resort Main Lodge is still under investigation. They apologized that they were not clear in their communication earlier in the day, and they're working to preserve the integrity of the fire scene and keep people safe by asking them to stay out of the area. It's still too early, they said, to determine whether this fire started accidentally or was sent intentionally, but they are asking the public to stay away from the area. Over the weekend, Lodge owner Bryce Campbell urged the public to stop speculating by saying on the Historic Lutzen Lodge's Facebook page that those contributing to the unnecessary negativity should stop. They are planning to rebuild the lodge as close as possible to the original and will be doing everything that they can to make sure that the rebuild is done in a way that makes the building seem as though it's always been there. The 963-word statement goes on to address some of the speculation point by point. And that speculation comes from the Minnesota Fire Marshal's office that said Wednesday, February 7, that the lodge had three unresolved violations from a recent fire code inspection, but it wasn't clear if those violations played a role in the blaze. The resort's night caretaker reported smoke coming from the basement boiler area located near the lobby area of the lodge. The ornate wood frame structure was then quickly engulfed in fire. There were no guests staying in the lodge that night and no employees were injured. Lutzen Resort was founded in 1885 by Charles Axel Nelson, a young Swedish immigrant, as a small fishing camp on the then remote north shore of Lake Superior.
All right. Well, speaking of places to stay or not to, we've had a lot of discussion recently about affordable housing in the area. The Duluth City Council is looking at encouraging affordability at one major development.
Yes, although several citizens voiced concerns about offering public subsidies to a housing development that lacks a component designed to be affordable for people with lower incomes, city councilors voted 8-1 Monday night in support of a proposed agreement that could bring 1,300 units of housing to the former hilltop site of Duluth Central High School. As originally proposed, the project, which is called Incline Village, would consist entirely of market-rate housing, along with 80,000 square feet of commercial and retail space to be developed at a total cost of at least $450 million to $500 million. City Administrator David Montgomery advised the council Monday that the developer has indicated a willingness to consider affordable components as the project moves along. While there are no plans to offer units at reduced rates in the first phase of the project, consisting of two interconnected six-unit condo buildings and one 220-unit apartment building, Montgomery said affordable housing could and likely would be part of the mix as the site is built out further. The would-be developers are Chester Creek View and Incline Plaza Development, which are two New York-based limited liability companies. The 60-acre Duluth Central site has sat idle for 13 years since the high school closed, and the prohibitive cost of extending needed utilities and other basic infrastructure has loomed as a major barrier to development of the property, according to city leaders. Now, city officials proposed to help the first phase of the Incline Village project forward with the help of about $25.8 million in tax increment financing, likely to be followed by considerably more TIF aid to the tune of up to $100 million total. Tax increment financing is a form of public subsidy that uses new tax dollars generated by a project to cover certain qualified development costs for some time. In the case of Incline Village, that could hold new tax revenues captive for up to 26 years before those revenues begin to flow entirely to the coffers of local state government units, including the city, county, and school district. But before the project can proceed, it must undergo successfully an environmental assessment called an alternative urban area-wide review. And if all goes smoothly, work on the site could begin as soon as June.
All right. Well, Shelley headed back to the Berkey, or at least skiing. A Superior High School sophomore is headed to the state ski competition this weekend.
Yeah. You don't hear a lot about kids going to state for skiing, simply because Superior High School doesn't have a ski team per se. But Olivia Mahalik, a sophomore at the high school, it has qualified to participate as an independent in the state ski competition this year. And she's hoping to bring back medals for her school.
All right. We'll wish her luck, and hopefully they have some kind of snow, too. Looking beyond the snow or lack of it, the City of Superior is looking to encourage artists in the area with the Creative Summit this spring.
Yeah, the Culture Events and Public Arts Commission in Superior is planning a summit for May, the Create Superior Summit, and their goal is to let artists know what resources are available, such as the newly created public art grant program that the commission created, providing grants to help with the creation of public art in Superior.
All right. Well, everyone should get their creative juices flowing. And finally, we've been talking about the weather practically this entire show, and if you think it has been warmer than usual, you are correct. WPR reporter Robert DeAndrea has the official numbers and this report.
The National Weather Service says temperatures were 8.5 degrees warmer than average in January. Minnesota was the only other state with a higher temperature anomaly last month. And December was the warmest ever recorded in Wisconsin. Sarah Marquardt is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. She says that while it might be warm, winter isn't over yet.
We're still in the middle of winter, and despite it being a mild winter, we still could have cold snaps, so there's still plenty of opportunities to get some snow.
The state's climatologist says February has been 19 degrees warmer than average so far. The state also saw its first ever February tornado on record last week. Robert DeAndrea, Wisconsin Public Radio.
All right. We've been joined by Shelley Nelson, reporter for the Superior Telegram. Thank you, Shelley.
Thanks, Robin.
And Rick Lubbers, executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and SuperiorTelegram.com and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more than music of Baby Eyes. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.
On my side, I stay.